national championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Since
hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Joe Cook, as always. You guys should listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform you can find out there. Today we're going to be starting off by talking to Bijan Robinson, the Longhorns' five-star running back commit for the 2020 class. And then after the interview, we're going to be getting into the first half preview of the Longhorns' 2019 season. Tell y'all about Louisiana Tech, LSU, Rice, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, and Oklahoma, what to expect out of those teams and those games. But first, we are joined now by the Longhorns five-star running back commit, Bijan Robinson. Bijan, how you doing, man? Are you excited for the football season?
I'm good. I'm ready. Just to get things rolling, with the season. I love this time of year. It gives me chills, just to get back on the field and compete against everybody, try to get a championship.
So, Bijan, the first question we have for you, and this is going to be a really big one, going in from Arizona into Texas. Where do you prefer, Whataburger or In-N-Out?
Definitely Whataburger.
Okay.
I don't know if there's a Whataburger in Texas, but Whataburger is definitely the go-to, hamburger spot, for me here.
Wait, you don't know there's a Whataburger in Texas?
I don't know. Is there?
Yeah, they're all over the place. So I'm guessing Arizona sounds like a Whataburger state.
I've been told that it was only in Arizona.
This may be a different Whataburger. I remember reading about this and that there may be I should do some more research on it. But hey, no matter what the establishment is, sounds like you got
The correct name.
You're not picking In-N-Out. That's kind of the bottom line
not
on this.
But the next question, we'll get into the Longhorn stuff. So, Bijan, what initially drew you to the University of Texas?
Just the family culture that they have there, how they perceive themselves as great people. They really are truly great people, and I like honesty and truth, and they gave me all I needed to know. Probably one of the bigger reasons was Coach Drayton. You don't really find a running back coach like him. How he keeps his face at 100 all the time, develops his players, and just the history that he's had, through his coaching. It was really big for me to look at. I feel he can develop me just how he developed, all the other great running backs that he had in his career.
So kind of along those lines, I'm sure obviously with Coach Drayton, you mentioned all the positive things that, led you to Texas. But you also, right, that week in June, you had USC's running back coach, I believe Coach Jenks, and then Ohio, yep, State's running back coach, all in the span of 1 week. You went from what it was Columbus to LA to Austin, all in, yep, the span of 1 week. What was that week of three officials like?
It was a great experience to be in all those places. I'm in LA a lot with my auntie. But, it was super tiring. I was trying to keep my head up, the last visit at Texas, because I was just really tired throughout the week. Because we would come home, for 12 hours, and we had to go right back out. So it was just a lot going on. But I just tried to have fun through everything. I knew it was going to be a lot, but just to, enjoy the moment and, cherish every bit of it. And luckily, Texas was the best visit, I feel, for me and my family. So just cherishing the moment and, just having fun through it was the biggest part of it.
So after the rush of recruiting pitches and everything that was thrown at you over those 3 weeks, Texas was the one that stuck in the back of your mind. What was it that ultimately got you to commit there and ultimately was the thing that stuck in the back of your mind?
Probably the coaches, because the coaches are a big part of, the recruiting and what you can do for the future. And just between those coaches and the other ones that I've met, no bad credit to the other coaches. All the coaches were great. I had great relationships with all of them, but, just the Texas coaches just stood out a lot because, they really connected with me and my family on the phone and, even in person when we talked to them. So I feel just that relationship that we have, it was huge. And, all the players there, they bring love, you know, through everything that they come with, and that stuck in the back of my mind, you know, this whole time.
So over the last week of your recruitment, it seems like it was pretty crazy. It was a pretty crazy swing from Ohio State to Texas.
Yeah.
Can you kind of give us a behind the scene breakdown of how Texas ultimately came out on top and how Ohio State was trying to keep you in the fold?
Yeah. So as you probably know, I did, you know, silently commit to Ohio State 2.5 weeks prior to Texas. Just because, you know, everybody at Ohio State was just in my ear, you know, players just telling me, you know, come here. I was getting a little pressure by the coaches. You know, you have to commit on this day or let us know by this date. So I just got kind of pressured into, you know, finally committing there, and I just took it. But knowing, like, you know, God had a bigger plan for me at Texas, you know, this whole time, because even Coach Herman was like, why not Texas? Everything that you want is here for development, for being a great person, and for football. That just stuck with me, you know, the whole time, like, why am I not choosing Texas? And, you know, this is where my future kind of lies, and I just don't know what I'm doing right now. So I just kept thinking about it, and I did switch, I think, like a week and a half before I actually committed. But after I switched, it had a good feeling in my stomach, and I really knew I chose the right decision and did the right thing.
So what was that night when you made the switch from Ohio State to Texas? What was going through your mind? What was the scene like?
Well, it was hard because, you know, I had to call back the Ohio State coaches and tell them, like, you know, I'm not coming here. I'm switching here. And, you know, that's hard for any kid to, you know, go through with another coach. But I mean, they took it well. You know, they were sad. It was a sad moment, but they still took it professionally and supported me, you know, wherever I went prior to that. And, you know, just calling Coach Drayton and, you know, Coach Herman and Coach Beck, that was huge. We had a great moment on that phone call, me telling them I'm going to Texas. I just felt like it was a true blessing to, you know, really talk to them and seek out their opinions on, you know, what we can do for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. It was a great experience, you know, for that night for me.
So obviously you mentioned that Coach Beck, Coach Drayton, Coach Herman, they did a great job of selling you on the football part, but what else about UT or even Austin really stood out to you, or are you really looking forward to experiencing when you get here?
Well, of course, you know, getting into football right away, but just you know, the culture of Austin, the city and the fans there. But I just feel fitting in right away, you know, becoming the great kid that I am here, just translating it to Texas and bring that bright mind and come ready to compete, you know, every day. But I really do look forward to, you know, all the things that I can do in Austin and just seek, you know, all the opportunity I can get there.
So it's not jambalaya or any of the festivals out here. It's the football, straight to football.
No, it's everything. Like, I mean, I hear everything about Austin, you know, all the good things about Austin. So I'm trying to experience everything. Probably not Sixth Street, because I'm not a party guy, but, you know, I'll probably go, you know, check it out a little bit.
Just pulling your leg, man. But, you know, you're saying that your relationship with God was very important to your decision, but what is your relationship like with your grandfather, Cleo, and your grandmother, Jerry? What has their role been in your recruitment process, in your development as a player in person?
You know, I live with them. I live with my grandparents. So we have a very strong relationship. And, you know, their opinions are big. You know, they'll let me go anywhere, you know, I decide to go. But just them talking to me, you know, helping me throughout the process was huge, because not everybody has, you know, both of their grandparents to tell them this is what you should look for in a college, is what you shouldn't look for in a college. And for them talking to me and giving me that outlook of, you know, what I could have for the future or just what I need going in towards college football direction, their opinions were definitely big.
So a little bit more about you on the football field. Obviously, you know, you watch your film and you see a 6-foot, 200-pound guy like you move like you do. It's very impressive. But is there a specific move or, I guess, combo that you have that you like to set up defenders with that you value over the rest of them? Or you just try to get past them any way you can without, you know, being partial to any particular move?
Like, if you're on Madden, what's your combo?
Well, definitely the juke move. Like, juke spin out of it, but I mean, I don't know, like you said, like, I just hate getting tackled. So I kind of do everything I could to, you know, not get tackled because I just hate going down. But just kind of embarrassing the defender, definitely the go-to move. Just sizing them up and then make them look real funny. You know, that always be pleasing me.
So then what would you say are your strengths as a running back? And what do you think you need to work on the most?
My strengths, I feel I'm very explosive coming out the backfield. I tend to, you know, have the ball loose a lot, which isn't very good. But, you know, that I feel that's very a weakness for me. And I've been working on it a lot. And just I feel another strength is stopping the, you know, quick burst, making lateral moves while still full speed running forward is a big strength for me. And just, I feel my vision is the best thing I have that God's blessed me with. So, yeah, I think my vision is probably the biggest strength for me.
So, I mean, you've talked about all the skills you have. Is there a running back, whether currently in college or a guy in the NFL, mm-hmm. that you kind of see yourself being similar to, or you want to kind of just be your own running back, be Bijan Robinson, Texas running back, and not have any comparisons?
Well, of course, be my own running back, be my own guy. You know, I don't want to be the second of anybody or, you know, comparison, but just to, you know, take parts of games as, you know, I look at Saquon, I like a lot of his film, and, you know, how we're similar by running the ball. Alvin Kamara, how he's used to do it all back, and how, you know, we both have a catching ability that not a lot of the running backs have. I look at Reggie Bush when he was in college. You know, he's my favorite player in college football. So I watch him a lot, just how he utilized his game and his explosion through the line and how he just gets past defenders, you know, pretty easily.
Going back to your recruitment, what players were in your ear the most during your recruitment, whether it was 2020 class or the 2021 class?
Well, I talked to Logan Parr. Me and him talk all the time. That's my dude. That's my dude, definitely. And we have a group chat on Snapchat. And, you know, we all just talk to each other. All the recruits, we all really talk to each other, like, a lot.
Who's the best Snapchatter in the group?
Logan. That dude is funny. That dude is funny. Like, oh, I mean, you know, they're funny, but, like, this dude is, like, I love this dude, seriously. He's super funny. You know, I can't wait to meet him in person. He's just a cool dude just to talk to. And Hudson Card, you know, that's another one of my dudes. We talk all the time, talk a lot, just about, just more than football, just about, you know, life and stuff, how we're doing. Just, he's a great dude to talk to as well.
So I guess the last question I had, and this is, you know, we talked a lot about your college career and stuff like that, but this last question kind of goes back to high school. You know, you're at mm-hmm. South Point Catholic in Tucson, Arizona, and you and the rest of the Lancers will be taking a trip to El Paso, I believe either the third yep. week or the fourth week of the season. How did that get set up? And are you looking forward to being able to play in the state where you're also planning on playing your college football?
Oh yeah, I mean definitely. We played them last year, and you know we won that one by a little margin. But no, I can't wait to go out there and play them. It's always fun going out of state to play, you know, a different team, and just that's a great squad. You know what they bring, you know, to the table is I just can't wait to see it. But I think the Texas coaches are gonna come out there and just, you know, look at the game, and I can't wait to go out there and, you know, play against them.
So, but John, before we let you go, do you have anything you want to say to the Longhorn fans who are listening or to the Longhorn Nation in general?
Well, you know, I just love you guys. I've really met nobody yet, but, you know, just the support that you guys brung, you know, on the commitment, you know, it's huge. And, you know, I can't wait to go out there and, you know, experience, you know, all the love. I'm going to give you guys all the love, too. And just stay rocking for a whole year. You know, they're going to make it this year. And, you know, next year when we all get there, it's going to be just another great year.
Good to hear. Well, thank you again, Bijan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yep, no problem.
Again, thank you, Bijan Robinson, for hanging out with us and taking the time to sit down and chat with us. And also, thank you all to some of the listeners for shooting out some of these questions. Big props to 303 Longhorn, Care Bear Kieran. We didn't bring up the Saquon Barkley. He did. We also had Steven Fisher, Oscar Lopez, Little Longhorn, Not a Rake, give us some of these questions. If I missed you, I'm sorry, but thank y'all for some of these questions and helping us out as we got prepared for our next segment, which is the Longhorns' first half of the season. There's no more weekends without college football, and we are at this point, I believe it is 11 or 10 days away from the Longhorns taking on Louisiana Tech. Let's go ahead and get right into Louisiana Tech. Joe, when you look at this Bulldogs team, it's a team that every single year seems to have one big game where they are just so close to knocking off a big name team. Last year was they were down by 3 points to LSU at halftime. The year before that, it was South Carolina where they were so close to beating South Carolina, lost by 1 point, and South Carolina went on to win 9 games that season. I mean, Skip Holtz and that Tech team are just a spooky 8 or 9 win team that always peaks during the bowl season. They're a good team.
This is a very good Conference USA team. Skip Holtz has been in the head coaching industry for several years now. Let's see how many. I got the web page loading right now. You know, he's been at Louisiana Tech since 2013, several 9-win seasons. This is a guy who knows how to kind of build and develop a pretty talented program for a mid-major. You know, being in Louisiana helps out. Being decently close to Dallas-Fort Worth, I guess, on I-20 helps out, although I'm not sure how many people are going from DFW to Ruston. But, you know, this is a guy who's definitely has experience in the college game, has experience playing up to opponents, and can definitely do that against the Longhorns. Just kind of looking at their roster real quick, you focus pretty quickly on the quarterback first, and the quarterback they have is Jamar Smith, a guy who threw for about 3,000 yards last year, 15 touchdowns, but he doesn't complete his passes at a very great clip. 57.3%, 15 to 10 touchdown to interception ratio. He's a guy that's going to help them out a lot, but he's not a guy, at least at this point, who seems like he's going to take over a game, specifically take over a game for the offense.
Right. The problem with Jamar Smith is he's either really good or he's pretty inconsistent. High ceiling, low floor. I mean, last year he had trouble down the stretch, but most of the time he averaged around 250 yards per game. And it helps also having probably the CUSA's best wide receiver in Adrian Hardy, who led the conference last year with 75 catches for 1,145 yards. The combination of those two creates what is a pretty explosive team at times. And that's kind of what that offense relies on, is for their explosiveness to generate their offense. Their top four wide receivers last year combined to have an average of 13.7 yards per catch, and catching the ball 62% of the time they were targeted. But the efficiency was the issue, especially in the red zone. Per Bill Connolly, Tech in the red zone last year ranked around 97th in points per scoring opportunity. Especially when they got inside the 10, there was an issue with Jamar Smith where he just could not be reliable. They were, I believe, 100th in the nation in success rate inside the 10. What they're really good at is being explosive. After that, the next step is where they have the trouble.
Yeah, and I think where you're going to see that explosiveness is from their wide receiver, Adrian Hardy. He's the guy that's going to be a tough matchup for any Texas defensive back who lines up at corner, whoever it might be. Looking how he did game by game, you remember last year LSU and Louisiana Tech played, and Louisiana Tech kept it pretty darn close with LSU for a while, and trying to determine if Hardy was a big reason why. Looking at his game splits, yeah, he was a huge reason why. 10 catches, 181 yards, 2 touchdowns. And we know how good the defensive backs are at Louisiana State. They're one of the claimants of defensive back U. So this is a guy that Texas is going to have to keep an eye on. He did disappear some against some of the better teams in their conference, like UAB. But then he also disappeared at times against, you know, UTEP, who isn't good, like, at all. So it's kind of a question of how consistent can Adrian Hardy be? Who will he get the number one guy, looking like Jalen Green, defending him, or, you know, does he line up maybe in the slot to create some matchup issues. Who knows? But, you know, the quarterback and Adrian Hardy, at least on offense, seem like the two guys that are responsible for the explosion, the explosiveness that Louisiana Tech offense has. But like most of Louisiana Tech's problems, not totally consistent and, should not be something that Texas should be able to handle. I think, you know, one of the things that I always kind of go back to is who are you practicing against? And Adrian Hardy, no disrespect to the Louisiana Tech corners, but you're practicing against them. I am going to tend to believe that guys like Jalen Green and Anthony Cook practicing against Brennan Eagles and Colin Johnson and, you know, maybe even Marcus Washington, you know, talented freshmen like that is going to prep them pretty well for what Adrian Hardy's going to throw at them.
Well, here's the thing. The secondary for the Bulldogs, and well, before I get to the secondary and the Bulldogs, Adrian Hardy is going to be a good test for whoever is the starting quarterback for the Longhorns. You're going to be able to tell very early on whether or not the Longhorn secondary is going to be ready. But going to look at the secondary for the Bulldogs, you have Amik Robertson. And this is going to be a great early test for Sam Ellinger and those wide receivers because Amik Robertson had 16 passes defended last year and also 7.5 tackles for losses last year. Now, that is a hell of a stat because between 05 and 2017, only six football players in the FBS had that combination of over 15 passes defended and over 7 tackles for losses. And the rest of the secondary around him, not bad either. Not bad either, but Amik Robertson is the guy right now who will be picking up a lot of the slack that they're losing from a guy who was honestly a pretty generational talent for Louisiana Tech and went in the NFL draft in Jalen Ferguson, who had 26 tackles for losses last year and 17 sacks. In total, he had 45 sacks, which is the most in NCAA history. So that's what they're losing on the front line.
Yeah, that guy was an animal. And not only that, they returned their leading tackler from last year, guy in the joining Amik Robertson in the defensive backfield and in safety. Darryl Lewis, 91 total tackles last year, 2 picks, forced a fumble. There is some talent on this team. I don't think there's talent across all 22, but at spots there is. Now, this is a little bit of a blind spot because I honestly don't know what defense they run. I honestly don't know what offense they run, at least compared to Texas's conference mates and you know, LSU and even Rice because they're a little bit more local. So I don't know the specific schematic matchups, but just talent level. I mean, you've got to think that Texas in having, you know, the last Charlie Strong recruiting class, the remnants of it, that 2016 class that was ranked in the top 10, the 2017 class that was ranked where it was just inside the top 20, and then two really good recruiting classes right behind it. You'd have to think that talent advantage will help them overcome maybe the name disadvantage they may have against a guy with like Smoke Harris.
Good name. It's a good name. But yeah, I believe
5'6", 171 wide receiver.
Wow.
Who played in 3 games last year. So got to watch out for Smoke Harris because I don't know if there are any smokes on Texas's roster.
No, I don't think so either. Last I checked. But this is a game that could catch Texas off guard. I don't think it will. But Louisiana Tech is nothing to thumb your nose at. And Texas is the biggest name on their slate of games. So they will be getting up for this game. But Texas luckily has Terry Bradshaw helping them get up for this game. But the next game, we're going to be sticking around with Louisiana. As honestly, earlier in the summer, I was surprised how this was not getting as much attention as it needs to. Now I think it is. But Louisiana State comes to town. The Tigers come to Texas, come to Austin. And boy, it's already sold out. There's a lot of hype around it. It's just mind-blowing the number of people that are coming in. And it's not just Longhorn fans. LSU fans travel well. That is one thing they are known for in the SEC is traveling well. They go to one big game a year. And it looks like Texas is that this year.
Yeah, this is a team that you know, like Chris Del Conte says, you're not just when you go to Disney World, you're not just going for the rides, you're going for the whole experience once you get out of the car. And yeah, that's LSU tailgating. That's LSU football. It's an experience as soon as you get out of the car. There's a reason it's sold out, and it's not, you know, I would bet that LSU fans are going to be pretty strong on the secondary market. Obviously, LSU's got a strong presence in Houston. You know, Baton Rouge is not terribly far from Austin on the drive, no matter what type of vehicle you're bringing. And, you know, this is probably the most exciting out-of-conference road game on their schedule, considering they get either, you know, SoCon Saturday or play a directional Louisiana school like many other SEC teams. So
it might be the most exciting out-of-conference game in college football.
Yeah, for this season, I definitely think so. You know, that's over matchups like Oregon and Auburn and Notre Dame and Georgia.
Texas A&M and Clemson, Joe. Come on, man.
Yeah, that's where I was going last. So this is going to be a big one. But, you know, like many LSU off seasons prior to this one, we've heard a lot about how they're finally going to open things up in the passing game. And maybe this year it has more credence than before, but – you know, we've heard this a lot lately.
Yeah, so a lot of people think that it's Ensminger who is the bringer of this new offense, but really it is their new hire in New Orleans Saints' offensive assistant, Joe Brady. He is supposed to be the new savior of the LSU offense, and it seems like they have one every other year, but Joe Brady, who is 28 and making me feel bad, is now the youngest assistant coach on their roster and is bringing in a more pass attack heavy offense than what LSU has supposedly seen ever.
Yeah, it's, you know, like we said, it's hard for us to give it a lot of credence at this point, but this guy did just lead, you know, one of the best offenses in the NFL with one of the best quarterbacks and best all-purpose players and best wide receivers in the NFL all on that offense. While the schematics may be pretty similar for what Davis wants to run, Joe Burrow's not Drew Brees. Terrace Marshall is not Michael Thomas. You know, whoever the running back is not Alvin Kamara. It's just, I understand them trying to open things up and use the talent that they've accumulated. It's probably pretty darn smart for them to do that instead of run toss dives like Cam Cameron wanted to do basically every other play. But, you know, off-season installs are not easy, you know, even if it is just wrinkles. And this is something, to be quite honest, that despite the talent level that LSU has accumulated, you know, on offense, Texas is used to facing probably more explosive and equally as talented offenses just when you consider Oklahoma first off. I mean, that's been the standard for offense these past 5 years. And Texas, at least against Lincoln Riley, has, you know, held them to about as close a game as anybody else in the conference can give them, and has, you know, even won a couple of those games. So, you know, the LSU is undoubtedly talented. Talent maybe right at or maybe even greater than what Texas currently has on its roster, especially when you throw in guys like Grant Delpit, Derek Stingley, Christian Fulton. Those are some names. Those are some dudes that are going to get called on like the first couple days of the NFL draft without a doubt. But Texas is at home. They're in year three of two different systems. They've got some understanding. This is going to be the biggest challenge, I think, all season for the offense, because Dave Aranda is not a guy who likes to sit on his heels, whether that's schematically innovation-wise or blitzing. And he's got guys like Kalavon Chasen, a number of defensive linemen that they always seem to recruit from in-state. This is probably going to be a low-scoring game. Both offenses probably think that they can do a lot to each other, thinking, oh, we got the new LSU offense going to run right over this Big 12 guys. Or, you know, oh, Big 12, we're used to offense. Year three, junior Sam Ehlinger. A lot of that on both sides. And this is probably going to be the closest game, the closest thing to like for like that Texas faces this season.
Right. And going back to the offense here, what Joe Brady is bringing in to LSU is a more RPO style offense. And this is where LSU fans are really excited because of Joe Burrow. Now, Joe Burrow is a guy who gradually throughout the season went from being a game manager to taking over in his last five games, where the last five games he had a completion rating of 63% and 8.7 yards per attempt. That is a pretty good stat. and really good if that's your quarterback. So he's definitely a gamer. He's, and if I'm speak conservatively here, he's a top 25 quarterback in the nation. But I don't think he is a game-changing quarterback like what some LSU fans believe he is. He's working with a lot of talent on his side of the ball. There is. I mean, that's what LSU does. They recruit a lot of good talent. Besides Terrace Marshall, who I don't know if he's going to have a huge impact in this game, six of their last seven top targets from last year return, including Justin Jefferson, who is his go-to wide receiver last year, had 45 catches for 875 yards. That's going to be the go-to guy for their wide receiver. And then in the running back room, which is really where I believe if they feel like they can take advantage of Texas's middle linebacker deficiencies, they're going to do it with a heavy run attack. It's not like, oh no, we're all passing now. If they feel like they can take advantage of the middle of the field, they're going to do that. And this year, while they have, it sounds like their junior running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think is his name, I don't know, is their starter. I think he's their starter in name alone, because I think really where they're hoping they can get their production is from some of these blue chip running backs and John Emery and Tyrion Davis Price, who both of those guys present equally big problems, where Emery is a gifted receiver and electric runner, and Davis Price is a one cut and go power run downhill running back. So you have that on top of a pretty veteran offensive line. They're feeling pretty good about this, but then there's the question of, hey, there's an install in the offense, and how complex is this offense really for the Longhorns, as you were talking about?
Yeah, and I think you're spot on with the running backs. I think Texas fans really would have enjoyed seeing John Emery go in the MLB draft, but that just didn't end up happening. And yeah, Tyrion Davis, John Emery, that is a phenomenal running back call for any program in the country, and one of those two guys is definitely going to see some action. And it's you know, a lot of the LSU storylines this offseason are pretty similar. How do you keep Joe Burrow upright? Because, you know, after him, it's Miles Brennan. And unless he's as good at football, this is going to be a really bad joke, but unless he's as good at football as his family is at cooking, I am not exactly sure how effective he'll be out there. So I think you're going to try and see them take a lot of pressure off of Joe Burrow. You know, 128 carries last year, you know, behind Nick Brozette and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but that's still a lot of carries. And, you know, what Jake Fromm said about quarterbacks running in the SEC to Sam Ehlinger didn't 100% apply to Sam Ehlinger, but it does kind of apply for guys like Joe Burrow, who may not be, you know, 235 pounds built like a fullback. He's tough. That's right, without a doubt. But toughness can only get you so far. That's for literally any player. And his best chance, the best chance LSU has, is if he's not asked to be this gamer, runner, you know, guy who you put the ball in the hands and win. You want him to, you know, obviously manage and get to that spot, not necessarily be a game manager, but he's not a guy that's talented enough to take over a game literally by himself. He's got to put it in some other people's hands accurately and at the right point in order to get it there. And this is going to be a defense that's probably going to throw a lot of multiple DB looks at Star Wars that Tom Herman was talking about. And I'm not sure he's ever seen anything like that. And if he has, it was against Alabama, who shut him out last year. So this is definitely going to be the biggest matchup. And there's a lot more to dive in, of course, as we get closer and closer to it. But there's a lot of similarities between both these teams, a lot of evenness, I guess you could say. A lot of, you know, five-star talent at several different positions and good depth basically all around. These are two programs that are kind of at similar places, they feel like, as far as program stature goes, with how many years their head coach has been there, what they are coming off of last year, what they expect to do this season. This is going to be big for both programs, and it's, I think there's a good reason why this is going to be the game of the week, even with A&M traveling to Clemson.
Right. And then on the other side of the ball, you have pretty much a loaded roster everywhere, right? You have,
oh, yeah.
You have the linebackers who they're replacing the Buckus Award winner in Devin White. That's going to be a big challenge. But you also have, filling in for him, Jacob Phillips, who was their top returning tackler with 87 tackles. Michael Divinity, who is tied on the team with 5 sacks, Kalevon Chasen on the edge, who are both very talented edge rushers. That's going to be okay there. Their defensive line has Rashad Lawrence, who was the best player on the field in the Fiesta Bowl. at least on the defensive side of the ball, and he's going to be your nose tackle, your defensive tackle, and this unit, it's not their best unit, but I mean, it's the big boys in the SEC. They're going to be fierce in the run defense, for sure.
Yeah, not a lot of interesting stories in that linebacker room, but yeah, definitely. This is a team that knows what it's going up against. Physical football is you know, what the SEC seems to pride itself on. It's what Texas prides itself on, and Texas is going to try and, you know, go blow for blow, Tom Herman and Tim Beck versus Dave Aranda. This is going to be not only physically one of the most intriguing matchups of the year, but just schematically, you know, these are two guys that lived with each other in Herman and Aranda, and Orlando was, I think, followed Aranda just after Aranda at Utah State and maintained a lot of the same principles. So,
right.
And there's a lot of storylines building up into this game. It's just exciting with Stingley and Delpit and Fulton, Kerry Vincent. And this is a loaded secondary. This is going to be a test for guys like Colin Johnson, for freshmen, maybe like Jake Smith, for redshirt or for sophomores like Brennan Eagles, just to see how far along they've developed in their time at Texas, because they're going to be going against maybe the strongest defensive back core in the country come week two.
Yeah, Grant Delpit, I mean, I don't know if there's many better players in the country aside from, you know, Brandon Jones and Caden Stearns, but the dude led the team in sacks as a safety and also had 5 interceptions as well as 9 pass breakups. This is going to be insane. So yeah, we got Rice coming to town. It's a quote unquote rivalry game, but you have Mike Bloomgren coming in, and he's really in year one. Last year, he cleared out Rice more than Charlie Strong cleared out Texas back in, what was it, 2014? I don't remember. Most of the talent on that team left. Whether it was guys like Calvin Anderson leaving and going graduate transfer, or them just being, he talked one of the quarterbacks into going and playing baseball rather than playing football. That's what he did. He kind of went through and was like, let's not go here. You don't need to do this. We're going to go in a different direction here. So last year was really kind of their year zero. This year is their year one. And they're bringing in a few big transfers like Stanford center, a Harvard quarterback, a guy who was really good in the FCS and their left tackle. But really, I think we can break this down by saying it's year one. It's a rebuild. They're replacing two of their best rushers on a run-heavy offense. Their right tackles, their right side of their offensive line is going to be brand new. And the defense for the Owls has just been atrocious over the past few years. And it looks like they're still in rebuild mode there. So let's go ahead and kind of jump over this team, because I feel like Texas should take it to the Owls. I mean, they have a lot of interesting talent on their roster. The Owls do. But at this point, I don't think Texas should have any trouble with them. I don't think they're a surprise team.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's going to be an NRG stadium in Houston. It's basically going to be a home game for Texas. It's probably going to be about 60,000 people there, and 54,000 of them are going to be Texas fans. So definitely a good way to test out how to play on the road without truly playing on the road. Like you mentioned, this is going to be Bloomgren's second year. He's bringing over that quote intellectual brutality model from Stanford, running similar offenses, trying to emphasize, you know, the academics of Rice, as well as finding guys to fit, be smart and be mean offense. But the guys that he has aren't meaner than the Texas guys. It's just no ways of getting around that.
Right.
And the other thing is with, you know, conventional offenses, which I mean by that is pretty basic I formation, maybe two tight end and two receivers, or two tight end. I don't know. Maybe just like one or two receivers on the field at one time. That's a style of offense that Texas has done pretty well with. I mean, if you remember last year, they limited, what was it, Kansas State to 14 points. USC wasn't air raid yet, and, you know, it was basically a couple lapses in the defense that allowed those points to score. It wasn't like there was a ton of lengthy extended drives for those scoring. And then Georgia, We all know what happened there. Texas barely beat them. So these are the types of offenses that Todd Orlando does well against. It'll probably be very interesting to, you know, you could see a package out there with Joseph Osai on one edge and either Jeffrey McCulloch on the other edge, or maybe you see Byron Vaughns out there and you see like a true 3-4 just because that's what the personnel will necessitate. So should be a pretty easy win. This should be the type of game where Texas can play backups.
That's what I was just about to say. This should be the one of those games where you see some of those redshirt players and see what they're bringing to the table. But at the same time, I'm more afraid of what the Rice Owl Band brings than what their football team does at this point.
Oh, they already know what they're bringing. That the 289 post, which is a B-minus at Texas that got ridiculed by the national media. That's that. Oh, man. I think as soon as that happened, like the Rice Mob Twitter account basically said, thank you, show for September already written.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, that is something that is, it's just too easy. You can't give the Rice Owl Band that material and expect to get away with it. But let's go ahead and get to another show on the turf in Mike Gundy. And Mike Gundy is one of those two, well, I guess now two coaches that seems to give the Longhorns fits.
Yeah, Texas either finds ways to shoot themselves in the foot or get shot in the foot whenever they're playing Oklahoma State. This is going to be a fun year. You got a quarterback battle up there to start with. I think it's Drew Brown and Spencer Sanders, one a Hawaii transfer, one a former Mr. Texas football. Not only are you breaking in a new quarterback this year, you're breaking in a new offensive coordinator, even though Mike Gundy's really the one that kind of runs things up there. That's all going to be made a lot easier by Chuba Hubbard. That guy is special. He's going to be one of probably the best running back within the Big 12 this year, if not, you know, within that top three upper echelon. He's a talented guy. That is a guy that's going to make things a lot easier for whoever ends up being quarterback. And they're going to, they find ways to get him the ball. He might surpass Justice Hill and what he's able to do. And then you can't forget about Tylan Wallace, you know, who almost got the Biletnikoff last year, was right behind one of my favorite players in Jerry Jeudy. But he looked like the Biletnikoff winner against Texas. And, you know, no matter who's playing quarterback, when you got Chuba Hubbard and you got Tylan Wallace out there, it makes things a little bit easier if you're going into your first year starting.
Right, yeah. Chuba Hubbard, who last year had 6 yards per carry and 740 yards behind Justice Hill. So that dude is explosive. And then Tylan Wallace, yeah, he's good, right? 86 catches, 1,491 yards. But that offense last year spread out the wealth. There are 8 Oklahoma State wide receivers who caught at least 2 touchdown passes last year. You're really spreading around the ball there. And their other guy, Dylan Stoner, is another name to watch out for on the other side of Tylan Wallace. Now, when it comes to the quarterback, when I talk to my Oklahoma State friends, it sounds like they're going to be running with a 2-quarterback offense to start off the year. We'll see how long that continues. But with a guy like Sean Gleason from Princeton coming over, he's their new offensive coordinator that they hired. He's looking to bring a little bit more pizzazz and a little bit more trickery to that Oklahoma State offense that you already got out of Mike Gundy. I mean, the ball's going to be everywhere. I feel like Spencer Sanders is a guy who really fits into that Gleason offense that's going to feature a lot more quarterback run options. So you're going to have Spencer Sanders running the ball with Chuba Hubbard and the ability to come out of that and throw to Tylan Wallace. That is a deadly offense that is preparing for up there in Stillwater. And then on top of that, you have that offensive line who last year had a lot of trouble keeping guys out of the backfield, but they are having 2 guys in the interior here coming back in Johnny Wilson and Marcus Keys, who are setting up to be 2 of their best players as well. So the offense looks to be having a bit of a rebound, but the defense last year was the problem, and especially those guys up front. Last year allowing on average 453 yards per game and 33 points per game. That front 7 is susceptible to the run and the pass and just about everything.
Yeah, last year was not the best of years for Jim Knowles. He's been someone that has given Texas fits in the past, although I think that maybe that 2017 year was maybe Texas giving itself its own fits, but that wasn't him. This past year was his first year, now that I'm looking it up, as defensive coordinator, and it was not a particularly great year. You know, giving up 452 yards a game, giving up 32.5 points a game, almost had them out of the top 100. This was not a great defense, but luckily it was a pretty good offense that kind of helped get them to that 7-6 mark. But let's not forget that, you know, in conference they were only 3-6. So this is a team that has some progress to be made in order to kind of get back to those levels that people are used to with Mike Gundy. But this is also an opportunity that Texas will have at not only at home instead of at night on the road. But man, there's got to be some sort of motivation for this game. I mean, this is a team that has basically had your number, you know, snatched, you know, the carrot away, the carrot on the stick, just out of Texas's grasp each of the past few seasons. It's time for Texas to finally get over the hump, defeat Oklahoma State, and make things a little bit easier heading down in the stretch towards the beginning of conference play by starting out 1-0.
Right. That's what you need. And it's really going to be how you attack that secondary. Because the defensive line, they're going to be starting brand new guys, and I think Israel Antoine is going to be basically their best guy up front. Calvin Bundage is going to be the guy who they're relying on after losing their best tacklers from the year before. Now their secondary is where they're good, and that's where Texas is going to have to really challenge them, with Sam Ellinger and Colin Johnson going up against a guy like A.J. Green, who is just a guy you can leave on an island, and he will excel there. Or Rodarius Williams on the other side, who will hit you in the mouth and come up on the run. So they're going to be decent on the outsides. That's where they're good, the secondary. And that's where Texas is going to need to excel, because they're going to be able to attack them, and they need to attack them in the middle, in the run game. If they can get that set up, then they're going to have to bring over some guys from the secondary to take care of that, and then all of a sudden Colin Johnson is wide open on top of Rodarius Williams. That's what you need. And I do believe that Texas is going to take care of business here against Oklahoma State, because you're right, they have the motivation from the years past. If that's not enough motivation to win this game, then they're doing something wrong in Moncrief. Next game we got is West Virginia. Neil Brown coming in is an offensive guru from Troy, and is a solid replacement for Daniel Holgorsen, honestly. But he's walking into what looks to be a rebuilding situation in Morgantown. However, coming into the game, he's going to have a week to prepare for the Longhorns, and winning in Morgantown against the Texas Longhorns would be the necessary signature win to start his program in West Virginia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Texas is their rival. What do you expect? Yeah. No, this game's going to be at 11 a.m. yeah, I'm a big Neil Brown fan. I kind of been a, you know, I listened to PAPN, and they used to be a big Neil Brown fan as well. And he did some great things at Troy. You know, where's Troy? Oh, it's that place where Neil Brown won 10 games multiple times. That's pretty impressive to me. It's not like there's a lot of difference between what he was doing and what Dana Holgorsen was doing. He comes from the air raid tree. I think he played for Hal Mumme, who taught Mike Leach the offense. So this is a guy that understands, you know, the offenses of the Big 12. But like Holgorsen, he keeps a good run-pass balance. The thing is although that they have a solid quarterback in Austin Kendall, a guy that, you know, OU had faith in, behind Kyler Murray, there's not a whole lot on this team. Most of their talent left, and that's kind of ironic considering most of their talent is often brought in through transfer. But this is a team that's not going to have a good line. They may not have a go-to receiver.
They're going to have good running backs.
Running back will be fine with who they got, and especially with the emphasis that Neil Brown places like Holgorsen did. But there's not a whole lot of good going on this season. It'll be a tough environment, but it's one that Texas has won in before, and it's one that they won't have Will Grier. That's a big deal. That the step down in a new offense from Will Grier to Austin Kendall should be a big reason why Texas is able to do a little bit better, because those threats on the outside were what allowed West Virginia to run all over the place last year in Austin.
Austin Kendall's a serviceable quarterback, but he's, again, like you said, no Will Grier. And they're losing their top four receivers from last year. I mean, David Sills, Gary Jennings, Marcus Sims, who entered the portal, their tight end, Trayvon Wesco, who was their fourth guy, is gone. Now you have no idea who's coming up next. No idea who's going to be taking over that wide receiver role. Luckily, like we said, their backbone is going to be pretty strong with Kennedy McCoy and Martell Pettaway, who both combined for over a 1,000-yard season last year. On the offensive line, I mean, they're going to be okay. They're going to be decent after losing Yodney Kajust, but it's not going to be anything like what they had last year. They're going to be having a bit of trouble on that offensive side of the ball, especially getting the new offense going, getting everything working in the same way, but there's just gaping holes all over that offense and on the defense as well. Now, the passing defense for West Virginia is going to have a lot of work to do. They basically lost every single safety they had to the portal. They all jumped ship. So now their defensive coordinator, Casey Vance, coming in, has got a lot of work to do by trying to turn Javonte Stewart, who is a 5'8", 197-pound safety, into a makeshift linebacker safety and filling in guys around him like Sean Mahone, who will be pretty important if he does well, but I don't expect that. Their cornerbacks are okay because they're returning both their starters, but, man, that safety room, their help over the top is spotty at best. When it comes to their front seven, no more David Long. They will have guys like Josh Chandler or Vandarius Cowan or in the middle, Reese Donahue, but still lots of holes that have been left on that defensive side by guys, transfers leaving, people graduating, and people leaving in the portal. So Neil Brown, he's been trying to scale back expectations from the West Virginia fan base and national media ever since he got there and took a look at that roster. So I think we know what to expect out of West Virginia come this year. Texas should go to Morgantown. It's going to be different. It's going to be difficult because it's in Morgantown. That's going to be the most difficult part of this game, is getting up for it. The next game, they should have no trouble getting up for it. Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. Now, Lincoln Riley, a lot of people think he is a product of what he inherited. And that is true. He inherited a very fortunate position, but he has done wonders with it. You don't just get two Heismans and two playoff runs like it's nothing. That is not something that happens. So he has done a wonderful job, and he finally nutted up and got rid of Mike Stoops, which has ultimately proved to be just enough for them in the Big 12 championship. Now they have Alex Grinch. And Alex Grinch is basically the exact opposite of Mike Stoops. Mike Stoops was running a two-gap scheme with off coverage and very conservative blitzing. That doesn't work in the Big 12, at least not since the early 2000s. Mike Grinch is bringing the Oklahoma defense into the next era, bringing it into something that's reminiscent of what Orlando does. Now, he does it out of a one-gap scheme with a lot of man-to-man with pressures and blitzing. What he wants to do is he wants to pressure you into making a mistake. That worked at Ohio State. That worked at Washington State. What he's doing there is he's simplifying the scheme, attacking more often. And honestly, it's proven to have some pretty drastic effects early on, even when you look at Texas. When Texas simplified schemes for their players in 2017 with some talent that was already there, the defense turned around in a hurry. It's possible. So what he's going to do is he's going to let go of some explosive plays, but he's hoping to win that turnover battle. That's the difference Alex Grinch is going to have. And that's kind of where the Big 12 defense has been going, right, Joe? This is how you win against these Big 12 offenses.
It has, but I think that creating turnovers at a certain level is kind of bullcrap. I think you kind of luck into turnovers, but at the same time, if you look at Alex Grinch's track record, this is a guy that, you know, at Washington State, the place where they literally probably passed the ball 98% of the time, he was able to make some pretty, reputable defenses that were good enough for people to say, oh, wow, Washington State isn't a total sieve anymore. Then when he went to Ohio State, it was him. It was Greg Schiano. kind of splitting responsibilities there, I believe, for a time. And then Alex Grinch started to take over. They were decent against the pass, 62nd, but against the run, they were bottom half of the country, 76th. You know, they gave up a lot of really explosive plays, it looks like. You know, despite being the 26th best defense in the country, there were still some problems there. And it was, you know, obviously there's a variety of circumstances going on with Urban Meyer stepping down, Ryan Day stepping up. But Alex Grinch chose to go to Oklahoma. You know, it's one of those things where if he worked when he was previously at a high-powered passing attack that, you know, moved quickly and, you know, where offense was the emphasis in practice, it's not hard to think that you could do that at that version of a program, but on steroids at Oklahoma. There's definitely talent there, nowhere near the talent like they have on offense, but there's still good players there on all three levels. And it's basically, this is going to be the season to prove just how good Alex Grinch is. I know we spoke about defensive installs or installs in general being disappointing, but there's really nowhere to go but up for this defense,
right?
For at least by the Oklahoma standard,
right? They're returning 8 starters as well, so Grinch is in a pretty good position to actually make this defense, you know, alive. So what they're doing right now is, right, they're switching from that 3-4 to the 4-3 defense, and I expect it to actually manifest itself. And what you're going to look for is the improvement amongst the defensive line. That's usually where you see that improvement, is when you go from 3-4 to 4-3. And guys I expect to flourish, Neville Gallimore, the guy who was their nose tackle, already racked the 50 tackles last year. He's a guy who's a space eater, will be a pretty good in the run defense. But really a guy who, if I was an Oklahoma fan, I'd be excited for, because I was excited watching him when he was a recruit, is Ronnie Perkins. And Ronnie Perkins, when I saw him as a recruit, his explosion off the line on the edge was some of the best I've seen in my time covering recruiting. He might be a little undersized for a 3-4 defensive end, which is why he wasn't great under Mike Stoops. But as a defensive end in a 4-3, where his sole responsibility is a C-gap, he will bring some pretty nasty pass blitzing.
Yeah, once he was able to kind of get in that Eric Stryker role, I forgot what they named that position, that's where he thrived. It wasn't so much inside. But this is obviously the biggest question. I mean, they lost, Trey Norwood that they just lost recently, the defensive back. Parnell Motley is back, which should make opposing offensive coordinators pretty happy. There's some talent, but there's definitely still some holes on this defense. And this kind of, you know, bringing it back to me saying, and other people, I'm stealing this line, other people have used it, them being tech on, you know, Mike Leach tech on steroids. They're reloading on offense. They're at the point where they're not, you know, hoping somebody else is good. They're reloading across positions, even at offensive line, right, with elite players. More so at the skill positions with guys like Theo East, Jaden Hazelwood, Trajan Bridges, Jalen Hurts. And then even if you go to the high school quarterback they just took, Spencer Rattler. This is a team on offense right now that is reloading. It's toughest to reload on the offensive line, and then you compound that by having to replace 4. But, you know, will there be a step back? Probably. Will that step back be any further than maybe like 10 in the country in total offense, 15 at worst? I am betting no. This is still going to be an elite offense with a skilled football player under center who's pretty good as a passer, very accomplished as a runner. Lincoln Riley has shown that he will utilize the right skills of his quarterback in order to get them into the, you know, down the field. And I don't see any reason to believe that that's not going to happen this year. It just may not be highest efficiencies ever like it has been in previous years.
Right. Jalen Hurts, the book on him right now, when I asked our Oklahoma side, better legs than Mayfield, more punishing tackler than Kyler Murray, which is obvious, but he doesn't quite have the accuracy of Murray or Mayfield. And so conservative has been the buzzword for the coaches when discussing the passing game with Hurts at the helm. So I'm expecting a lot more checkdowns and a lot less of shots downfield. More efficiency rather than explosion from this offense is what they're going to be trying to go for with Jalen Hurts under the helm. Now, he's going to have a lot of help around him, like you said, in that skill position. I mean, you're going to be missing Hollywood Brown, but CeeDee Lamb, Grant Calcaterra, and Charleston Rambo is your starting three wide receivers. CeeDee Lamb and Grant Calcaterra, and Grant Calcaterra is, I think he is really good, are some of the best wide receivers in the nation. So Jalen Hurts has weapons to throw to. And then the running back, we'll see what happens with Kennedy Brooks, but the guys behind him are proven. And actually, you know, I'm a little bit skeptical in saying that because, you know, each one of them looks good because they were running behind four NFL offensive linemen last year. But they also have Trey Sermon. You know, Kennedy Brooks is good. Both of those guys combined for 2,000 yards and 25 touchdowns last year. So, you know, that's pretty okay. And then behind those guys, five-star running back TJ Pledger back in, what was that, 2018, I believe, was the class. And then last year, a Texas target, Ramondre Stevenson, who is like a Samaje Perine type of player. So you have those guys backing Trey Sermon and Kennedy Brooks. Their running back and their wide receiver rooms loaded. And you're talking about the offensive line, Creed Humphrey at center. He's the guy, he's the glue. Now you're going to be putting in some guys behind him who are newer. They're not veteran, but they're going to be good enough to really, you know, as you said, keep this offense probably within, at the very least, the top 15 in the nation, which is going to be good enough for Oklahoma. Joe, you know, it's going to be a tough road in the first six games, the first half of the season with LSU and Oklahoma. Before we get out of here, what is your prediction?
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't ask that. Well, I already said that they're going to beat LSU, or at least I believe that they are going to beat LSU. But, you know, I also said that I could see this team somehow ended up going 9-3, and that would have to happen by losing games that you're really not supposed to, or, you know, winning. No, that's basically the only way, losing games you're not supposed to.
Right.
I think the bottom of this stretch is 5-1.
Really?
I think that they could go undefeated against LSU and OU and then somehow slip up in Morgantown or against Oklahoma State yet again. I don't think that's – I think that's a good place to be halfway through the season. One loss, possibly two wins over two top 10 teams, and one slip up. We've seen that slip up cost you before, Ohio State and Iowa, Ohio State and Purdue. We've seen that cost teams before. But, I mean, it just kind of seems to be a pattern at this point until they kick that pattern. I'm not really willing to say that, yeah, they're going to be undefeated after this stretch. I think this team's good enough to overcome a lot of mistakes, but they haven't proven that they can just take care of literally everybody quite yet. So there's a loss somewhere in there. It's not to LSU. I'll go ahead and say that. But I think that they don't get through the first half of the season completely unscathed.
See, Joe, your problem was I didn't ask you who they were going to lose to. I asked you what the end result is.
Oh.
So I'm going to say 4-2 is a good floor for the Longhorns. If they're 4-2 after this stretch, I'm not worried. Even
with
if
the losses to Rice and Louisiana Tech, right?
I mean, hey, you beat LSU and Oklahoma, but again, if you're 4-2 after this run, even if it is lost to LSU and OU, I'm not worried. I'm not freaking out because then you're going to face Oklahoma in the conference championship and get your revenge there. But I think 4-2 is a good floor. I think if you're 6-2, you should be ecstatic and count your lucky stars. But I think 2-1 in the out-of-conference is a must at the very least. And then 2-1... in conference over those three games is a must at the very least. I would be pretty happy with that if I was a Longhorn fan. I know it's not probably what Longhorn fans want to hear, but if that's what you get, I'm not going to be too upset with it, honestly. It won't be fun, but I'm not going to be like, this is the end of the world. But I think we're going to end off there. That has been your 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. Thank you for hanging out with us. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Joe Cook, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JosephCook89, and you can find me on InsideTexas.com.
You guys can find us on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform you can find out there. And on that note, thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.